Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 26th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going?
We're in a heat wave, Graham.
And you're out of restrictions, though, so you're no longer masked and all that, right? You guys are completely back to normal, or what is the deal in England?
Yeah, Freedom Day was last Monday.
Okay.
Cases are going up, and we're in a heat wave.
Oh, man. And it doesn't usually get so hot there, so that's got to be, not so easy.
No AC in Cornwall.
Yeah, I figured. Well, on my side, it's been kind of a whirlwind tour, as you know, because of our recording schedule and stuff. I was traveling from Europe to the U.S., so I'm finally in the United States after, like, God knows how many months. Had not been here since, before COVID even started. So having a good time, though. Got to New York City, and I'm now down in the Philly area, so hoping to connect with everyone on the Clear Admit team while I'm in the States. And but it's very weird to be back after a long time. So strange stuff.
Very good. I'm sure you're getting a chance to see your family. That's most important.
Yeah, that's key. Yeah, absolutely. It's been great. So as usual, Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business is our sponsor. So we're going to hear a little bit more about their program and then we'll get into it. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. All right, so Alex, what's been going on the MBA admissions front?
I just want a big, quick shout out to Laurie Stewart, who is a friend of mine, used to run the program at Carnegie Mellon. She doesn't anymore, I know that.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great that they're sponsoring us. And yeah, Laurie Stewart was fantastic. And I think she's still in the industry, Graham.
Yeah, I believe she might be at Forte. And Kelly Wilson, who's admissions director over at Carnegie Mellon, is terrific too. We got to get her on the show at some point. But they're super generous to sponsor this podcast. And it's a great program too. So very cool stuff. Tell me what's been going on though. It seems like people are moving to go to business school now, so we're really out of the season sort of ended for last year.
I haven't really seen any movement on wait lists and stuff at this very late stage.
Yeah.
Most of the activity that we're seeing is sort of targeted towards next season. So folks on Apply Wire, like the three folks we'll cover today, getting profile reviews, and sort of people in general gearing up for next season. As you know, you're hosting these essay workshops with top schools and so on and so forth. So yeah, I think we've pretty much switched gears at this point, Graham.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I actually just wanted to note that we just published essay topic analyses on the site over the last week or so for Cornell, Fuqua, Emory, and Washington Foster. And, there are some other schools that have released their deadlines, and I don't know that we've analyzed their essay topics yet, but, some of these schools Emory is one of them, HEC, the Indian School of Business, MIT Sloan. So all the deadlines are out for a lot of these top schools now, essay topics. And we've also been posting the recommendation forms and questions on the site to just make it really easy for applicants to have access to that stuff. And over the last week, we published Columbia, MIT, Washington Foster, Wharton, and Yale.
Nice.
So if you're curious, what your recommenders are going to be having to write about, you can just go to the site and quickly get a look at that. I'm also really excited that we started these admissions director Q&A, kind of one-off podcast episodes that we've been running. And I guess we ran one with Emily Thomas from Columbia Business School. And we've also run just recently, this past week, an episode with Blair Mannix, who's the admissions director at Wharton. So it's been fun connecting with those folks. And we've got some more on tap, so stay tuned. And then you mentioned, Alex, these events. We've done two essay workshops, but at least when this podcast airs, we will have done two. And we've got one more, at least in terms of what's scheduled, one more that's going to be this Wednesday, July 28th at noon Eastern. I'll be emceeing again, and it's a roundtable discussion with admissions folks from UNC Kenan Flagler, UCLA Anderson, CMU Tepper, London Business School, and INSEAD. So it's another amazing lineup. And I love that we have some international schools too. Obviously, two of the really, really great international programs in LBS and INSEAD. So that'll be cool to just have those folks alongside some American programs. And again, just talk through the admissions process and essays and what they look for. So you can still sign up for that. There's just a couple days left before we do it. But you can sign up by going to bit.ly/clearadmitessayinsight. And that's all one word, all lowercase. And Alex, I guess we're continuing with Clubhouse. Every Thursday at noon. We've had a little bit of juggling to do, but luckily we've had our friend Chandler from Stacey Blackman Consulting helping us out a little bit. So those sessions are always good fun.
I have a quick question for you, Graham.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Duke Fuqua data form?
No, I have not. Have you?
Well, they have this new quirk because they're a little bit frustrated that their candidates aren't able to pronounce Fuqua.
It's Fuqua. Yeah, I know.
So they have this audio clip now that you have to check that you've listened to. And it goes, few qualify, Fuqua.
Ah, that's good. That's a good way to remember it.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it's funny because for many years when I worked at Wharton and was in this industry, I always used to mispronounce it. I would say like Fuqua. And then I, ran into, I think it was Sherry Hubert or somebody over in admissions at Duke, and they're like, it's actually Fuqua, like the word few. So that's smart that they're doing that to get everybody on the right page.
Of course, I am joking, but I wanted to throw that out there.
That was a total joke?
Yes.
How did you know that they, because it is something that they've been talking about in terms of like, I think people routinely mispronounce it. And so they often tell us, make sure you say Fuqua.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, you got me.
Well, now they listen to this podcast, they know how to pronounce Fuqua. Few qualify.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, they should hire you, Alex. All right. So if you're listening to this podcast and you have any questions or you want to submit, alternate pronunciations of business school names, you can send your emails to info@clearadmit.com. Just use the subject line wiretaps and Alex and I will get back to you. Alex, anything else this week before we dive in to talk about our candidates that you've selected?
Well, I'll wait till next week and we can talk about how to pronounce Emory's Business School.
I'm not even going to go there. Yeah, that's a tough one. All right, that sounds good. All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is an ApplyWire entry. It's a candidate that's going to be applying this fall to start in 22. And they've got 11 schools on the target list. They've got Dartmouth, Duke, Georgetown, Indiana, Notre Dame, NYU, Oxford, UCLA, UNC, Vanderbilt, and Yale. This person's they're enlisted in the military, and they've got a career that's lasted about, 5+ years at this point in the military. They have a GMAT score of 650 and a GPA, a perfect 4.0. They're located in Germany. Basically, they're looking to switch careers from military to consulting. They mentioned that they have a pretty unique military experience and that they work as a substance abuse counselor. And all their military time has been in Germany. So I'm assuming they're on a base there, dealing with, other military folks who are having substance abuse issues or something. And they also mentioned they're a member of a nonprofit organization in the Philippines, and they work, I guess, part-time or in their spare time as an executive producer for a startup digital media group. Done that for more than a year now. Long-term goal is to get into social impact or nonprofit. So, Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because it's an unusual background, this combination of military, but in more of a kind of, counseling role.
Yes. Sorry, I was taking a swig of my tea. I mean, quite honestly, I'm a bit puzzled by this candidate. So I could go either way.
Yeah.
So let's sort of break it down a little bit. A 4.0 GPA is absolutely fantastic. That's a perfect record. I think we'd want to know a little bit more about sort of the nuances of the academic record, where they got their degree, and so on and so forth. So that will be good. But no matter where they got the degree, they couldn't have done any better, which I really do like. So I like that. This is an enlisted military candidate. Most candidates targeting top-tier business schools are not enlisted military candidates. They've done their undergrad and gone through sort of a different channels into the military.
Right.
And in that regard, it can be a little bit more challenging on the one hand. On the other hand, you sort of can almost play that bootstrapper card. If you're coming from sort of different circumstances and sort of overcame some stuff, went to the military and then sort of pursued your academics simultaneously and have really sort of developed and done some interesting things. Quite frankly, their writing looks really good, because when they wrote the supply wire entry, I was actually just very impressed in terms of how they communicate. So I got a sense that this is a smart person. They've really sort of gathered their stuff together. They're doing very well. Their experience in the military is unusual to me, Graham, and you can comment on that more if you like it in a minute. I don't think I've seen a candidate that's a substance abuse counsellor, and not only that, they're doing it in a base out of the United States in Germany. So there might be some real interesting stuff there that they can bring to the candidacy. I'm a little bit nervous about the 650 on the GMAT. I'm wanting to see an enlisted person who's done things a little bit unorthodox to really show me with a powerful punch, a strong test score. So the 650 may become a more limiting factor. So just be aware of that. It's at the lower end of, let's say, the range for maybe top 16, top 20 programs and so on and so forth, right? And then just getting a bit more clarity on the goals. For sure, if you're a military candidate, the most common short-term goal is consulting. So everyone will buy the consulting in the short term. It makes perfect sense. Making that connection to the long term is going to be important. I don't know if it's somewhat related to what they're doing with this nonprofit in the Philippines or whatever it might be. On top of all that, they're doing something in digital music. So that's quite cool. Digital media group, I should say. So there's quite a lot of moving parts going on here, Graham. With great execution, they could do quite well, I think, in the admissions process. But they will require really good execution, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting to me is that if you hold aside the test score, you know, you have the beginnings of like a potentially really interesting story, you know, as you pointed out all these great elements to their profile in terms of they're kind of unique, you know, and you just don't see a lot of enlisted military folks, first of all, and then in this kind of a role in an international market. So it's just interesting. And I feel like, you know, the goal of going into consulting could make sense. I guess I'd want to know more about like, why do they want to do that? And what is the sort of social impact work or nonprofit work that they want to do in the long term? And is there any way that it could tie in at all to some of their experiences to date, whether it's that experience on the board that they're on or working in the media company, or even, you know, with respect to like substance abuse? I don't know, but it would be cool if there were a thread that could be woven from the past to the future. But yeah, I'm worried about the test score. And you know, it's funny, I think that the test score is probably why they have such a wide range and such a long list of target schools, because, you know, you look at this list of target schools and you say, okay, you know, they're going to be below average on the GMAT at most every school on their list, but they're certainly closer to the average at, say, Notre Dame or, you know, Vanderbilt, you know, or some of the schools on the list like that, versus, you know, when you look at, say, Tuck or Yale, they're, you know, way below average. So I just, yeah, it's a shame. I mean, they've taken the test three times, they said. So I think they're kind of at the end of it on that, and they don't feel like they're going to be able to improve there. So this is going to require a major effort in terms of, you know, like you said, weaving together the story, making it all work, and making it super compelling. And I just wonder, I don't know if they have an explanation for the performance on the GMAT. I mean, some people will write a short optional note to say, look, I've taken the test three times. I know it's important. And I've historically not been good at standardized tests. And I really hope the committee can consider my, 4.0 GPA. Again, we need more context to really give them advice on that front. Like, where did they go to school? What did they study? But still, it's an interesting candidacy. And I do encourage them to apply to a mix of schools. I would not apply to 11, but I would encourage them to include this level of range in the ultimate list that they have, right? So even if they only have 6 or 8 that they apply to in the end, keep this range, because I recognize that they're going to need to kind of cast a wide net.
And I think the 650, as you sort of indirectly point out, is puts more focus on this 4.0 GPA. We need to know more about sort of that academic transcript, the quality, and so on and so forth. I mean, again, you can't do any better than a 4.0 GPA. We just need to know where it was attained and so forth, and the discipline and et cetera.
Agreed. So I want to thank that person for sharing a really unique profile, very interesting to discuss. And yeah, just obviously they can post further details to the site if they want more feedback, but otherwise best of luck as they travel through the admissions process. Alex, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 2. So this is another ApplyWire entry, and this person wants to start school in the fall of 22, and they are targeting Columbia, Dartmouth, HBS, Kellogg, Chicago Booth, Wharton, and UT Austin. And this person's been working in the energy sector and sort of energy private equity, and they want to get into either consulting, investment banking, or private equity, and we'll unpack that in a moment. GMAT score is a 710. GPA a 3.7. They've been working for 5 years, and it seems like they have kind of an engineering background, but they got into kind of an energy investment company where they manage quite a bit, $170+ million worth of assets, and lead engineering investment analyses. So I think, you know, sounds like interesting work. They mentioned that they enjoy what they do, but the growth opportunities aren't really there at their current company. They'd love to move to an energy private equity company, but they know that's a kind of tough, kind of a long shot, right? So they're interested in consulting or maybe investment banking in the short term. So what do you make of this? They did mention that they've taken the GMAT a few times, and they don't think they're going to take it again before round one. So any other details you want to share on this one, or kind of thoughts you have?
I mean, frankly, it sounds like to me, Graham, that their work experience side of it looks very good, right? It says, I currently work as an engineer / asset manager for a small energy investment company backed by a larger known private equity firm where they manage 170 million plus worth of assets and lead engineering investment analysis. So I'm going to ask you, Graham, and I hate to put you on the spot, what is that kind of work, and how is it different to, let's say, private equity work?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I guess what they're doing is it seems like they're investing in energy companies, and their job, I'm assuming, they must have an engineering background because they're combining kind of financial expertise and engineering expertise to probably analyze possible investments. And it sounds like this small fund that they work for is actually backed by, like you said, larger kind of known private equity funds. So I think it's interesting work. I guess for me, you know, the thing that I'm kind of struggling with is they have this sort of goals that are, you know, maybe private equity, maybe banking, maybe consulting.
Yeah.
And that's tricky. And I should mention, they did state that they're Indian from the US. So I presume that means, you know, undergrad was in the US. They have family in Texas. I should also mention that, because that may relate to geography choices for them. But yeah, it's an interesting role. I guess, I'm assuming that's what it is, that they basically had to learn kind of, maybe they studied both finance and engineering. I don't know, but it's an interesting role.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I asked you because I think sometimes, the expectation that ADCOM understands exactly the type of work you've done and how that fits in terms of your goals and so on and so forth, you can't always assume. Because when I'm reading that, quite frankly, Graham, I'm like, sounds like the dude's already doing private equity type work.
Yeah, no, you're right. It does have that feel, yeah.
So it confuses me that their goal is what I'm reading and what I'm inferring, I think, is that they're in a small private equity shop and they want to get to a larger fund type move, which again I think can be very, very challenging. And I get what they're saying. It's maybe the best route, the most sort of plausible route is get the MBA, go into investment banking for a couple of years, get that experience under the belt, and then try to make that switch into larger fund private equity or something like that. So I don't think the candidate is going to write a goal statement saying, I'm thinking about private equity, investment banking and consulting. I think they're trying to weigh which of the three paths makes most plausible sense.
Right.
As well as then connecting to a long-term sort of vision of what they want to do. So I get that. I think that's really, really good. Their GPA, again, very strong, 3.7. I'm guessing in the engineering discipline, because I think you can learn finance on the job and have an engineering degree. I don't think you can learn engineering on the job with a finance degree.
Probably not.
If you can, then you're way cleverer than the average. But anyway, so I'm guessing that. So a 3.7 out of an engineering discipline is fantastic. The concern, I think, is this 710 GMAT, which is unfortunate. But I do think this person's applying from slightly overrepresented population, Asian American, of Indian origin, engineering-focused, finance-focused. So they all sort of checked quite an overrepresented box. So quite frankly, I would say absolutely this candidate needs to come in the first round of the schools that they're targeting. That 710, even with everything else super good, and I do think the work experience does look super good. Not entirely sure that they're really that involved outside of work. That might be another little squiggle there. If you see something on that, you can comment on it in a sec, Graham. But that might be a little bit of a concern and maybe sort of shifts you out of an M7 to a top 16 sort of target area. But yeah, if they had that 740 GMAT of their sort of, you know, the average at top schools of their population applying, I think their work experience, Graham, quite frankly, sounds really good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with this candidacy. And by the way, as far as outside activities, they mentioned they do a little bit, you know, some hobbies where they're in some sports leagues and do some general volunteering, but it doesn't sound like there's a lot, right? So
yeah, that doesn't stand them out.
No.
Yeah,
so yeah. So the issue they face is that they point out their job's going pretty well. And so they're kind of like, well, if I can't go to a top 10 or to, they mentioned UT Austin, I guess, because they want to be in Texas, that they may sit it out, you know, they may not bother, at least in the near term. So I, you know, yeah, it's kind of, if this person had like a 760 on the GMAT, then I would say, hey, you know what, just spin your work experience as being, like you're saying, pretty close to private equity. And as having, you know, because it's backed by some private equity funds, like you could argue that you've got some connections and, you're really excited to kind of make the pivot fully into PE, and you're going to go to an M7 school and do it. You know, that would be, but because they have a lower test score and potentially a weaker outside activities or, you know, a kind of volunteering kind of profile, it makes things a little challenging because they, you know, they have a bar set where they want to go to a top school. But as of this point, their candidacy is sort of on the borderline. Work experience is great. I would want to know, like, where's that 3.7 coming from? Is it from, like, you know, is it from UT Austin? That would be pretty impressive, right? But I just, yeah, it'd be good to know, a little bit more. But I it's a shame that they can't take the test again, or they've taken it a few times and they just haven't been able to get up above that 7.10 mark. So
yeah, and quite frankly, as we know, 710 is still a really good score. It's just relative to the peers that are also applying with similar profiles,
right,
to those top schools, then that's where the concern comes in.
Yeah, and you make a really good point. I think we're so close to this industry and seeing candidates that sometimes you get numbed to, yeah, I mean, a 710 is a great score. It's like way above what, you know, your average Joe is going to get on that test. But yeah, we see over and over again the averages at these top schools are higher than that, and particularly in, you know, competitive pools like, say, Asian Americans or, you know, the Indian population. I mean, it's just, yeah, it can be off the charts. I would say this person, they could get into some of these schools, but they're going to need to obviously have a really compelling application, some nicely sort of targeted career plans.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be great if, I don't know, if they're still interested in the energy sector or there's a way to kind of put a sort of personalized stamp on the career plan. And then I would just want to know more about what do they do outside of work. Maybe they are fairly active and they can present some of the stuff they've done and help bolster that piece of their profile. But yeah, this is a tough one. And they should absolutely apply in round one.
Yeah, I would suggest, I mean, they say top 10 or UT Austin, which obviously is a geographic preference. But I really encourage this person to look at, you know, the lower end of that top 10 in terms of a couple of more schools that I would qualify sort of fits into that top 15, 16, but they could all, you know, they're just as easily in the top 10. They all sort of at par, because we talk about tiers, Graham. So that tier that includes, you know, the likes of Ross, Duke, Darden, Yale, and
NYU.
NYU, Stern, and a couple of others. I'm just a little bit nervous. I think I would love the work experience, assuming it's backed up by great recs. You know, clearly they're smart despite the slightly lower GMAT score. I'm just a little bit queasy, actually, Graham, in this lack of really sort of impactful outside of work stuff. If they had that in their armor too, yeah, I think that would be really good.
So one thing that I was going to say is, you know, if they want to do banking as a gateway into private equity, then, you know, adding a Stern or a Cornell to their list could be pretty smart,
yeah,
especially as it might allow them to cast a slightly wider net. But again, I hear what they're saying. They want to go sort of top 10 or bust, but just something for them to consider, because I do think the GMAT's going to present a hurdle.
Some folks say Stern's a top 10 program.
Yeah, I know.
And I wouldn't disagree with them. So, yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, very interesting. Thanks to that person for sharing. And yeah, hope best of luck to them as they travel down this path. And yeah, keep us posted if you'd like on the site. We'll continue to provide advice. Alex, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is another applicant who wants to start in the fall of 22. They've got what looks to be 11 schools on their target list, and they include Berkeley, Columbia, Fuqua, HBS, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, NYU, Stanford, Booth, and Wharton. This person's been working in HR due diligence for, I believe, a kind of big four firm. They are thinking about investment banking and or private equity or asset management, like hedge funds and things post-MBA. They've got a whole long list of target companies, which is sort of a who's who of all the banks, from Barclays to Credit Suisse to Goldman, JP Morgan, etc. Their GRE score is a 327, GPA 3.4. They've got 4 years of work experience, currently located in China, but they graduated from a liberal arts college in the U.S. where they majored in applied math and German, and actually managed to work in an exchange semester in Germany as part of their undergraduate experience. They worked in Boston for a big four, what sounds like a couple of years at least. And, you know, we can get into the nature of the work they were doing, but in terms of the mechanics of like their career trajectory, they basically did not get into the H-1B lottery. So after a period of time, I guess about a year ago, so probably after about 3 years of working in Boston for one of these big four, they had to go back to China and are still working for the same company there and continuing to work on a lot of pretty prestigious deals, et cetera. So that's kind of their situation. They mentioned that they took that GRE and landed that 327 without any prep, and that they're thinking about taking the GMAT in early August with an aim of getting a very high score. So that's kind of the background. What do you make of this candidacy? Because it's also pretty interesting in terms of international experience. And yeah, so what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know there was such a role as HR due diligence. And I mean, basically, you're I guess, companies' exposure to their 401k benefits plans and stuff like that. I mean, it's amazing to me what sort of financial engineering goes on at companies anymore around the world. So, I mean, honestly, it's fun to read this stuff. It sort of allows you to learn more about stuff that goes on in the real world. But that's obviously a bit of a sidetrack. There's a couple of super interesting things here. Obviously, good international work experience. I mean, even though they probably would prefer not to have been relocated back to China, would prefer to have stayed in Boston. So that was probably a bit of a hiccup for them, but maybe it sort of helped them do some different things. I assume that they're originally from China, Graham. I don't know that we know that, but I assume they're originally from China, studied in the US, got a job in the US on some kind of visa situation, and ultimately had to return to China and is now looking to do their MBA back in the US. So, again, assumptions on my part, but that sort of makes sense. It looks like they've done very well at work. And I think they're probably the sort of person that does do really well. And you know, they're very smart and stuff. They have a 3-4 GPA, but it's in applied math and German or something like that. So,
yeah, those aren't too, yeah, those are tough subjects.
You know, again, yeah, I mean, they're tough subjects. When I first saw it, it says graduated from liberal arts college. I'm thinking 3-4 liberal arts, that could be a little shaky. But then it says in applied maths and German. I'm like, wow, okay, that's different. And again, I'm assuming they're Chinese. So they could obviously speak lots of different languages, and they're super smart with the old the analytics side. I think they could probably put a really good cogent sort of story together, but that's kind of what's going to be really important in their candidacy. I do think, you know, they have a 3.27 GPA. We talked about this before we came on air, Graham. That's average for top programs, so that's very good. But they did it cold. So to me, they absolutely do need to retake the test with prep. And maybe even retake the GRE. It doesn't really matter if they have a GMAT or a GRE. But, you know, literally, if they retake the GRE, get that mid-330s or something. Just put in a ridiculously high score. Because if you can get, let's say, a 327 cold, and again, that's still a very good score, that's like, to me, you know, drafting your business school essay, saying, well, it took me a couple of hours, that's it. They're good essays. It's like, well, they'd be great essays if you spent some time on them. So do the due diligence across all the elements of the application. Retake this test or do the GMAT. Get that fantastic score. That will be really helpful. But anyway, Graham, that's a little bit of waffle on my part. I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, no, I think the things that struck me here were, you know, as you said, they probably didn't want to go back to China because they were trying to get a visa and stuff. But it's ultimately resulted in some pretty interesting experience. And I also liked the way they described their career plan, which is to, you know, do a bit of a deeper dive into M&A. And they're hoping to, you know, work for a bank on the sell side for a few years and then eventually head into private equity. So they have a really, like you said, they can tell a cogent, you know, story about all of their experience to date and where that's going to lead them. I too was struck by the, wow, 327 on the GRE cold. I guess my first question was, why aren't they just taking the GRE again if they think, you know, if they think they can prep a bit and hit it out of the park and get like a 3.33 or whatever would be like well north of any top school's average.
I think they got a perfect quant score, right?
Yeah.
Off of taking it cold. So.
Yeah, near perfect. Yeah, 97th percentile, I think.
Well, what's 170? Can you get more than 170 as a quant score?
Yeah, actually, maybe not. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
I don't know for sure because I'm less familiar with GRE than GMAT. But in any event, it's interesting to me that they're going to take the GMAT though, because I sort of was like, whoa, you've already done the GRE and you kind of know how that test works. But maybe they've been prepping GMAT for the last 6 weeks and are, you know, aces on it, and they'll get a, you know, 770 or something. So in all cases, you know, whether they use this 327 or a test score on the GMAT, you know, It should be fine. I'm not worried about the academic profile. And I think they have a good story to tell. I guess, you know, it would be good to know if there's much in the way of outside activities. And you did ask them this on the site, and they said not too much involvement beyond paying back their alma mater by, you know, doing recruiting work and providing career advice. It does sound like they do some other stuff, though. Like they do relay running with a team at work for these charity runs to raise money for homeless shelters. And so, you know, maybe there is enough to kind of piece together to have a decent outside activities profile, and couple that with some specific plans on how they're going to get involved on campus at these different schools. So, again, I like this candidacy. I think they should get into a top school. I feel like they probably need to narrow down the list because they have 11 schools on the target list. And I, you know, even if they could manage to sort of fill out all these applications, I wonder if the recommenders would really want to do it as well. So I would narrow the list down. I've noted they don't really have any, you know, rural schools on their list because they mentioned that the liberal arts college they attended was in the middle of nowhere, it sounds like. And so they have, they actually joke that they have PTSD from being in the middle of nowhere. So they want to be in a city ideally, or certainly near one. So they have a bunch of schools that are in or around cities. But I feel like they might need to narrow. And if they know that it's banking, that may help direct them in terms of picking the schools that they want to really focus on here. But again, good candidacy and pretty interesting, like you say, this focus on HR due diligence and stuff. So yeah, I feel like there's not too much else to say on this one, unless you had any other thoughts.
No, but what I will ask you, Graham, let's assume it's investment banking post-MBA, which seems the most logical first step out of the MBA. Three schools they should be applying to with investment banking in mind.
And let's assume that they get a really good, you know, test score on the GMAT and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, you know, I would say, you know, Wharton, Booth, Columbia or NYU. I mean, those are the ones. And some people mentioned Cornell too, but they're not even on the list for this candidate for one reason or another. Maybe because of they want to be in a big city. So
they don't want to go to Ithaca?
Yeah.
Is it Ithaca?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So yeah. I don't know what the reason is, but they, yeah. So, yeah, those are the ones that jump to mind. I think, you know, obviously, when you talk about private equity, if that's the longer term plan, then you get into the idea that, well, you know, Harvard, Wharton, Stanford, the very top schools often have strong networks in PE. So
yeah.
I get why those schools are all on the list too. MIT is actually a really good school for finance that I think sometimes goes under the radar a little bit. So there are a lot of options for them. But I guess it'd be good to know how they do on the test too.
Do they need to apply Columbia early decision?
Certainly wouldn't hurt. I mean, if they would be really happy to be in New York, to go into investment banking, and you know, Columbia's a great school, early decision will certainly increase their odds. I think, are you asking me, like, do they need to apply early to get in there?
Mm.
I mean, I guess my view is that they're probably interesting enough to make it in the regular round, but I mean, it's not as easy. You know, it's obviously early decision is the way to go. If you really know you want to go to Columbia, it's very smart to apply early because it sends a strong signal to them. So yeah, tough call.
Very good.
Yeah. So one last thing I wanted to mention is that we published this list on the website as part of our Real Numbers of MBA Admissions series. We mentioned, we kind of went through the cost of kind of 1 year cost of all these leading MBA programs. We did one for the US and one for Europe. And it literally takes into account tuition, room and board, expenses, books, I mean, everything that you might spend in a year in business school. So that's up on the site. And it's really interesting just to see the range and prices. And, you know, obviously the very top schools are clustered together, most of them being north of like $100,000 a year. But then there's some good bargains as you move down in the rankings a little bit. So just interesting to see. And it's something that you were telling me that we don't really discuss very much. So I just wanted to mention that that's on the site for people to look at if they're curious about cost. But again, it's not something that we often talk about.
which is the most expensive program, Graham?
It was MIT actually had the highest cost, at least in the U.S. And I think the U.S. schools tended to be more expensive. Yeah, MIT clocked in at about $120,000, you know, whereas, I don't know, some of the other schools like, say, Fuqua, which we were talking about earlier, they're $97,000 for a year in terms of total cost, right? So your expenses and tuition and everything, right? So
where does Columbia sit?
So Columbia is right up near MIT, being in New York City at 117, right? So,
yeah.
You know.
So that takes into account cost of living.
Absolutely, yeah.
Perfect.
So, you know, and then obviously there are schools, you know, like, I mean, University of Georgia is 49,000, right? So there's some pretty big variations. But if we're talking about sticking within the sort of U.S. News top 20 type schools, they're clustered pretty closely together. But anyway, yeah, interesting to just see these figures. I don't think candidates take them into consideration too extensively when they're sort of thinking about where to apply, because you first need to figure out like what kind of a financial aid package might you get. And so it could all be moot. You know, you might go to an expensive school, but have an amazing financial aid package, right? So just, I think that's just good to know though. And that's why we're putting these numbers out there, just so people have a handle on them.
Very good.
All right. So, Alex, thanks for picking out these three ApplyWire entries. And I think we've definitely turned the page. We're in the new season. And everyone, yeah, please join us on Wednesday for the essay workshop we're going to do. And yeah, we'll see you next week, obviously, for another edition of Wiretaps.
Very good. Best of luck. Stay safe, everyone.